Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry. And we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description. The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Velant. Henry and I founded Velant out of our own frustration with the confusing, bright, and unsightly clothes we saw in badminton all over the world. But now, it's so much bigger than that. Our mission is to simplify the badminton journey and show the world how incredible badminton is. So make sure you check out our badminton basics at velantwear.com and follow us on our socials at velantwear.
So before we begin this episode, just like to give a shout out to Justin Lee for becoming an all-access patron. Thanks, Justin. So on today's episode, we have Toby Wodanka, who is a former professional badminton player from Germany. After winning several national junior championships, he reached the top 200 of the world ranking in men's singles, as well as the number one spot of his national ranking in Germany in all three categories. He is 30 years old and is currently working as a badminton coach at an elite sports school, as well as a tutor for coaching education in Germany. After his professional playing days at the National Center, he finished his studies in mathematics and sports teaching, but always felt an urge to make a difference in badminton. That's why he's doing what he's doing right now, coaching, running a YouTube channel, online badminton course, and podcast.
The first step is always finding something that you really love, and that sounds easier than it actually is. I think having that self-awareness and really feeling what makes you happy is not that easy, but I was happy with badminton. I think also because of that coach, I felt that this was really giving me a lot of joy, and I was didn't felt at that time at all like a sacrifice to put in the time, put in the training. I think this is a really good sign if you do something all the time and you don't have the feeling that you sacrifice something. Then I would always say, go for it. In the end, I cannot say I didn't try it. Maybe what would if, and yeah, I had that peace of mind also, even when I stopped and when I didn't reach all my goals, I had the feeling I would do it right away. Once again, if I get into the same spot, even with those maybe small chances of making it to the Olympics, winning big tournaments, it was so much about the journey and also being happy with what you're doing.
So welcome onto the podcast, Toby.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we're really happy to have you on, Toby, and we do have a lot of people in the community, badminton community, that are already quite aware of you. Now, I called you Toby in the introduction, but before we started this podcast, we did have a question to you because your full name is spelled T-O-B-I-A-S, and we asked you whether it was pronounced Tobias or Tobias, and I think you have a bit of a story about that, so the floor is yours.
Yeah, like Tobias is that's how you would say it in Germany. But I had a funny experience when I was younger and we went on holidays. And there was a waiter asking me what my name is. And I always said, my name is Tobias. And then he looked really disappointed and went away. And I thought, oh, did I say anything wrong? And then he just returned a minute later with two beers. So I sometimes have that misconception that people think I'm called two beers or that I'm ordering two beers. So yeah, that's why it's fine with Tobias, but also Tobias. I'm used to both things.
Two beers? What beers did he give you?
I can't remember. I actually was pretty young, so I was also wondering that he brought me two beers right away. But yeah.
And where was this holiday?
I was on the Maldives.
I was on the Maldives. Okay. Wait, I thought I've been to the Maldives before. They're not allowed to serve alcohol there, right?
At that time, they've been allowed to, for sure. <Okay. laughs>
Maybe that's why they gave you a weird face when you said two beers. They're like, oh, we don't actually serve alcohol here. But he didn't even say anything to me except two beers. I must go get him two beers.
Yeah. What's your name? Two beers, thanks. Okay, no problem. Okay, Toby, it's really great to have you on this episode. We've had lots of questions come in through our Instagram on the story that we posted. And many of them, I'm sure you'll cover in the discussion that we have today already. But there's a few that we just want to start off with that might not be discussed directly in what we're talking about today. The first question is from @BadmintonAndy. Now, he's an English coach, and you probably already know him or have heard of him. And he commented and asked, your videos are great. How tough are they to make?
Oh, extremely tough. And I've seen that and also listened to the episode with Jenny and Greg. You had them on the show before. And it was a huge relief to hear them as well saying it takes hours and hours to make those videos. And yeah, it's the same for me. 5-minute video takes, I don't know, 5 hours, always depending a little bit on the topic and how much editing is needed. But yeah, also for me, I have the problem that I'm not at all a native speaker, so I have to record it over and over again because sometimes I don't know the right words or have to do it again and again. So yeah, it is a lot of work, but also so much fun to both things, recording and editing, and also, yeah, being a little bit creative with also the topics I'm covering on YouTube.
Yeah, I completely understand having to need to read a script. I'm always a script kind of person. And when we do our videos as well, we'd have the script written down, and we are native speakers, and we still have to record it multiple times as well. So we understand the pain. And Jeff's laughing at me right now because I am very much someone who reads as if I'm reading a teleprompter. So if you put the wrong words on the screen, I'm going to say something really, really abnormal. So Jeff is shaking his head at me right now for those who are listening.
He has no ability to read and then process and then say something. He just reads it. So there was one time I actually put in first person. So I said, I'm Jeff. And he actually said that he's Jeff because he just read it directly.
Yeah, sometimes with those videos, I have the problem that afterwards I realized that I used the completely wrong word through all out the video. And the most extreme thing was when I was doing those home workout videos, I recorded them in one take. And it was, I think I was saying throwing against the roof instead of the ceiling. When I realized it, I was so pissed that, do I have to record it once again? And then in the end, I decided to record the full video. And it was so much work, but that's, yeah. In the end, I'm also not happy if I rewatch it and then think,
Yeah, it's that kind of dedication that gets you all those views that you're getting at the moment, Toby. And speaking of, I guess, the videos and the creations that you've made and content you've made so far, we have a question here from Shaquita Debele, who is an international badminton player as well. And her question is, what are the top 3 videos you've made on your YouTube channel?
Oh, that's a good question.
Too many.
I think has nothing to do with the counts of views in my eyes. It's always those videos about smash and backhand and dives and stuff that get all the views. But especially the last ones I did, I tried to go more into things that probably do not get clicked so often, but I think that could make a bigger difference. So for example, one I did about how to actually structure technical training, that it's not only standing on one spot and always playing the same shot over and over again from the same position, but making it a little bit more realistic and trying to bridge the gap between the complex game situation and the, I would say, basic technical training. Yeah, this was also a lot of fun, and I think a lot of coaches and players could benefit from that one. And yeah, also one of the recent videos where I talk about 5 big mistakes. Also, it's not really about showing some technical strokes or how to hit a certain shot, but more about having the right mindset coming to training and yeah, not tapping into the classic mistakes I think a lot of coaches or players without coaching experience do in the beginning.
That's really interesting where I think as a player, because you know the complexities of it, then you know, I guess, the deeper things that badminton players need and potentially they miss out on because you've been in that position yourself, unlike, say, someone who's maybe just thinking about smashing harder or being able to play the backhand. So that's really interesting. And that's really good with the all the content that you're creating. So Toby, there's going to be some more questions later on in our discussion, but for the time being, let's hear about your badminton story. When did you start playing badminton? At what age? And then how did you get started from there?
I think kind of a basic or a classical story. My parents both also played badminton and actually met because of badminton. So yeah, there were also a lot of club activities, tournaments they went on. And I was right from the beginning when I was able to walk, it was like kind of standing in the hall, holding a racket and trying to hit the shuttle. I think I actually started in the club at the age of 5. And from there on, it developed. Like I always had fun there, being there, not only playing, but also all these social things with the club, with the other players. When I got a little bit older at the talent camps. And yeah, I think like most or a lot of European players, that's the way how they get into badminton.
Yeah, it's certainly hearing that your parents met through badminton. It's a great story to tell because I think, you know, me personally, I met my girlfriend, long-time girlfriend from badminton as well. And I like that you can have that common ground in sports. When it comes to your badminton, I don't want to talk about love for a moment because I'm not talking about love in terms of two people, but why did you love badminton when you started? You know, you'd be going to all the tournaments and with your parents and seeing the sport, what it really is, that a lot of people, you know, around the world don't actually get to see what badminton truly is. What was it about badminton that really struck a chord in you that you were like, yes, even though your parents played it when they were, you know, younger, potentially older as well, but what was it about badminton for you that, you know, made you want to become such a successful player?
I think in the beginning, it really was that social aspect. Like I loved the sport, but I did many different sports. I also played tennis in a club. I played soccer in a club. So I did a lot of different things. I also liked those, especially because I liked soccer because it was a team sport. But yeah, I think badminton, I was also a little bit more successful. So I was allowed to get onto cooler tournaments. And I also felt that I was on a higher level there. And I think that also always plays a role. If you're successful in something or that you feel that you are quite good at something, then it makes fun. I think no one that likes to do something where he completely has no success at all and feels like he's terrible at. So, but especially the complexity of the sport, it's never boring. Every training is different or you can do so many different things. And yeah, I think that is also why I really loved it right from the beginning.
I think that's another reason why you can find so many topics to do videos on, because there are so many aspects of badminton that you have information to share. And just going on to someone on Instagram who asked, the handle is _Skenos, S-K-E-N-O-S. And he asked, or she asked, how old were you when you first started playing? And is there an age where you think it's too late?
That's a question where I think about a lot because I started very early at 5. And I think a couple of years, maybe months ago, I would say, yeah, you should start 7, 8, 9. But yeah, the more I read also about other sports, for example, I heard that Steve Nash from the NBA, I think he started, first time he played basketball was with 13. And that was really shocking to me because he was 2 times MVP in the one of the most competitive leagues, also in a very open and complex sport. And yeah, I started to think a little bit, yeah, it depends a lot on what you're doing before. I think if you're doing no sport at all until you're like age of 8, 9, then it's probably too late. But I think if you're doing, if you are very active, doing a lot of different things, then I think it can still work if you start later. So I haven't figured out the age yet, but I think I'm going more into the direction of, yeah, if you start with 11, 12, 13, still possible to become very, very good if you have some, yeah, good coordinative skills from other experiences before.
Yeah, so you've heard it from Toby, guys. You can start a bit later and still become a very successful badminton player. Although Toby started playing when he was just walking. So it's very different to some players. So in terms of your story, Toby, I want to get back to that and expand a bit more. And the first thing I would like to ask is, can you talk us through the journey from you becoming a junior player and then, you know, becoming a senior and how you moved up in the ranks as well?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, when I was younger, I was also very lucky to have the good case that a lot of good players around my age coming from a few kilometers away from me. So for example, Isabel Hertrich, she's living, or she came from almost the next town. And maybe you've also known Max Schwenger here to stop a couple of years ago, but he was also a really successful German player. And we had a very cool group. So we're not really coming from a region with big training centers or big coaches, but yeah, we were all very enthusiastic. And of course, most important, we had a lot of enthusiastic or supportive parents that were driving us hours and hours to get to the next good coach, to get a good training. And that helped us to get some good basic skills there in the beginning. Also, I think we pushed each other at that moment. But when I think back, I think for me, most of the times it was more the social thing in the beginning, as I said, that I was not so much like, I want to become a pro player or I want to put everything in. So I think there were also kids a little bit more determined in the beginning and maybe putting in a little bit more work. So I was not all the way at the top. But then when I turned around 17, 18, and we had a new coach, I had a lot of different coaches. As I said, there was not a center or a big setup. So we always had to find someone new from time to time. And then there came a coach that really lighted that spark in me. I always loved it, but I never was like going all the way or all the distance. And I also like to do a lot of stuff besides sports and also social things in school and so on. And from there on, I first time got the feeling that he believes in me, that I can get even further. So maybe get to the national team, get on a really high international level. And yeah, I'm super thankful for having him because it feels like that turned my career a little bit around or like gave me more of the direction of, okay, this is not only about junior badminton now, the real part starts afterwards.
That's really good because I guess from your perspective and what we've spoken about in the past, that you didn't really have a textbook career of your badminton career developing because you didn't have a set place you were from in terms of a club. You had a lot of different coaches. But I wanted to hone in on that coach that really connected with you and really motivated you. You said that he believed in you and really got the motivation up. And motivation is something that we'll be speaking to later in the podcast episode. But what about that? So how did he show belief in you? How did you feel that? How did he project that? And what else was there that makes you remember how much of a difference he made in your mindset and your career?
For me, the main difference, like I don't want to say that the other coaches didn't care about me. There were a lot of great coaches I had that were also amazing in caring about the players. But I really felt that he was caring so much about me, first of all, as a person. He was supporting me in every kind of way and giving me the perspective of becoming a good player. But I always had the feeling the most important thing for him is that I'm happy with my decisions, that I really also want to go down that way. And that's also how he, I think, treated all the players, that he didn't have the view that everybody has to become a top player. You have to really want it. But if he felt that you wanted it, then he also believed in you. And I don't know, maybe this is also something I think every player is a little bit different. I think we talk about that maybe also later, that I think there is not the perfect coach for everybody. But I think at that time of my career, he was exactly the perfect one for me. And yeah. I really felt that, okay, there can be so much more in that sport. And I actually loved it so much more just playing, like also training. I was giving those extra 5% in the end. I was more focused when I went on court, and I led to drop other things around badminton so I can focus more on really playing. Not because I was forced to, but it was my decision, and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like he was the perfect coach at the perfect time for you, Toby. In terms of, you did mention that essentially he helped turn what would be your junior and senior career around. What kind of barriers or challenges did you have when you first met him that, you know, you felt that he, besides mindset, was there anything in particular that he was able to impart to you that has really stayed with you until today?
Yeah, number one, definitely that you have to think every session, every minute of training, that you always, when you do an exercise, also ask, does it really make sense what I'm doing here? Like, I think he was also challenging us to challenge him. Like, when we are not happy with something, then we should definitely tell it and then discuss it. And if we maybe have some good arguments, then we could change the exercise. I think this is something I also want to try now as a coach, to always encourage my players to challenge me and challenge what I'm doing. Think about, yeah, maybe gives us the most upside now in training, or are we actually training what we want to train? I think many times training just goes into the direction of, yeah, we do exercise 1, 2, 3, we work hard, and that's enough. But I think you always also have to think about if you're working into the right direction, or if there is maybe a better way, even if you're already working in the right direction, maybe, or I would say always, there's maybe something you can improve, maybe make a little bit better. And yeah, he was so much into that thinking badminton, thinking every little aspect of it. And yeah, I think that also kept to me all the way.
Yeah, that's great. And I guess speaking on that topic still, it's so important that as an athlete, you know why you're doing a certain exercise. And on the flip side, from the coach's perspective, I just wanted to chime in here. And for all the athletes out there listening, when you are doing an exercise that maybe does seem a little bit repetitive because your coach wants you to work on a certain thing, I feel that there's something you can always get out of any exercise. Yes, it might not be the perfect exercise, but you can always focus on taking a net earlier. You can always focus on variation from the rear quad. You can always focus on a certain thing. And even in something that seems maybe repetitive, I still think that there's, depending on your focus, you can really make that exercise beneficial for you depending on what you want to focus on. And of course, those focus points will come from your discussion with your coach. But if you find that there maybe is getting a bit repetitive, yes, you can change the exercise or just change your mindset to it and focus on a certain part of the exercise that you need to develop personally.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you don't need some super fancy exercises, or it's not like the top players are better because they are doing better exercises than than the others. They are doing them with a better focus. They are doing that. They're using the exercises more as a tool to reach their goals. And it's not like the exercise. I always get asked when we do coach education, can you show us a few good exercises?
Yeah, and the magical exercise that will make everything perfect, right?
Yeah. And my answer to is there are no good or no bad exercises. It's always the context makes the exercise good or bad. Like I can watch the Danish national team doing a 3-against-2 exercise. And then, yeah, when I go home and do it with my, I don't know, 11, 12 year old kids, I can save that time, or I can do something. I can drink a cup of tea because that won't bring them anything. Yep. So yeah, it always depends on the context. And also in my training, I do a lot of maybe boring exercises like lob drop net. I think this is one of the best exercises there is because it's very easy to get repetitions on many different goals. So as you said, set a certain focus and then you can work on the footwork. You can work on different shots. So
many things. Yep, that's perfect. So Toby, we've kind of gone into the coaching part a bit, but I want to get back to your badminton story. So when you were starting to make that transition over from the junior level or the junior age group to the senior age group, you've told us previously that you were successful as a junior, but you were never part of the youth national team. What happened from there and then that transition into the senior game?
As I said, I think that coach really gave me those extra motivation to just go a little bit further, to invest a little bit more. And I think it was two times when we went to the national selection for under 15 and under 17. And it was always like one or two spots I was missing to get into it. So that also felt like a, of course, disadvantage because the top coaches never really saw me so often. I was invited to any national matches or like the bigger junior tournaments, youth junior tournaments. So, and they never really had the focus on me there. And I was actually really close of stopping after under 19 because I had that almost perfect year where I played with my partner and we won every match the whole year on, and also the national championships. And my big goal and my dream was getting to the European championships, nominated for that one. And then, yeah, I got the decision that they decided to go for two younger players instead of us. So to go for the future, I think also a big part of that play that they didn't really see me playing. They saw me at the national championships, but that was, they also couldn't see how much I was putting in at that moment, how much I was working. So that really struck me hard at that moment. But yeah, also again, that coach helped me to support me and say, yeah, this is just the beginning. It's junior badminton is fine, but the real thing is if you play with all the grown-ups. Yeah, so luckily I didn't stop there and I continued to work hard. And yeah, I think it was basically that putting in more work than before and focusing more on sports I think at a certain point, that's just essential. Otherwise, you have no chance to get anywhere.
The fact that you even considered stopping badminton at that time, Toby, means that that was a very crucial part of your career. And I wanted to, I guess, let the community get a bit of a better understanding or perspective as to what was going on through your mind at the time. We know that your coach has helped you significantly from that time point, especially from what I love how you said that he'd involve you in the process of you know, the exercises and almost as if gaining commitment from the players because they're part of the process of developing themselves with the coach. But in terms of that moment when you didn't get selected to go to the European Championships, what was running through your mind and how did you overcome that?
I think the first reaction was shit, because I was also not expecting that, because I had the feeling that I've done everything I could that year and I've earned it and still didn't get there. So I had kind of that feeling, yeah, no matter what I do, I have no chance to reach my goals. So that was the first feeling I had. And then I think with a little bit of time, I was able to look back at actually what I achieved, because nobody was expecting us to have such a season to win the national championships there. And I think it was not a lucky year, because if you have so many good tournaments, there has to be something that is the reason for that. And I think I realized I can do that. I can get it even further if I just continue, because yeah, my first years were not perfect in that kind of textbook career way where I had, as I said, working so hard. I was training a lot. I was putting in a lot of work, but I was also lacking in a lot of areas, like still don't have so good technical skills, for example. So this was, I think, always something that really held me back and also made other people think we do not really believe him. I think he's not good enough with the racket. And yeah, but as I said, then he also got to me and said, what is your goal now? What do you want to achieve? And I said, I have to admit that I still want to get to the national center. I want to make nothing but badminton at the moment, because this is what really brings the most joy to my life.
That's awesome. And obviously a significant impact that coach has helped you realize your potential or realize how much you wanted it. Now, if we fast forward a little bit now to your senior career, when Henry was introducing you on this podcast, he said that you were the number one in all three events, men's singles, men's doubles and mixed doubles. Can you take us through how your senior career went and how you transitioned from doubles to singles and why?
Yeah, at that moment, I focused on mixed doubles and doubles. I think I focused completely in under 19. So at tournaments, I was only playing those categories, but also because we didn't have so many players at my age and we couldn't play so much doubles. I was also working a lot on singles also to be able to cover full court. And it also helped me. I felt that maybe I was not that good with the racket and with those technical things, but I was also that working aspect and being fast on also longer distances helped me a lot in doubles to maybe get a little edge on others. Yeah, but my plan was to go to the center, to the Olympic Center in doubles. So I tried that. Usually here you do a test week and then afterwards you get an evaluation. And yeah, I got denied there right after my junior career. And then I tried it 1 year after and I got denied once again. And I had also the problem that I had no real partner that was also going all in on it. And he was more heading into a different direction. I had not the setup to work on, I think, those skills I needed to make it to doubles. So I still had that wish. I just wanted to make it. I want to become better. I want to get to the center. So I made that maybe kind of strange decision to some, because that's really unusual to change from doubles to singles. But I said, yeah, I did singles all the last years. And yeah, I just try to go for that one. I think it's easier to train there. I don't need so many partners to play singles. I can do a lot of 2-against-1, 3-against-1 things. So yeah, like kind of from one day to another, it was singles only, and only with that goal to, okay, then I try it for singles. And then I around 1 year later, so with the third try, I went there again. I was also a little bit lucky that a lot of national players stopped 1 year before or that year. So the group was quite small. Also the coach there at that time in Saarbrücken, Su Yan Wang, a Chinese coach, he's also a lot about hard work, work ethic. And I think he saw that I was not the best player in technique and in tactic terms, but I was really working hard. I was giving something to the group. And so, yeah, I was lucky, but super happy that I made it that year and got accepted to go for singles.
Okay, so now you've made it in for your third time of trying to the National Centre, Toby. Take us back to, you know, you've joined, you're a singles player, you've gone through the motions, you're starting to do a lot more of that singles training. And then what happened from there until now? Because obviously now your life is still centered around badminton, but a lot has changed. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, of course, it was not the goal to get to the National Centre. That was my one step, but my big goal was making it to the Olympics. So I had a lot higher goals. And at that time, I also read the story of Thomas Leyburn, who also went to the National Center very late. I think it was exactly my age. He also changed from a different category. So it all felt to me like, oh, this sounds like my story. And you always feel at that moment that good things will happen and you're on the right track. But yeah, it didn't went that way I was hoping for, because I also had a quite severe injury after a couple of months, and also had that problem of, I was behind already. I was one of the worst players in the group. So I always had that mindset of, I have to do extra. I have to do extra. I have to work harder. I have to work more. Maybe also forgetting a little bit to think, working harder by thinking harder, but I was putting extra work in, and that also led to the injury probably, and also kept me away from really recovering. And so, I was running a bit behind or not really able to catch up. And in the end, after around 3 years, in the end, it got a lot better. I didn't have the injury anymore. I also felt the progress, but I felt that I will not get there. I will not reach anything like I was hoping for in terms of international level. And it was kind of that situation where I thought, okay, I have to kind of sacrifice a lot of other things for that now. And then I came to a turning point where I said, okay, I still love it. I would love to go on training 2 times a day. And that would be cool. But I also want to do a lot of other things. So then I made the decision to move back to my hometown and finish my studies, because I stopped them during the years there. And eventually afterwards, as you said in the beginning, I studied teaching, but decided to, I want to have more badminton in my life. So finished it, but then went right into coaching. And I was quite clear about that after my time in Saarbrücken at the National Center, because I saw other people studying teaching, and I think it's a cool job, but I really wanted to have more badminton in my life. So quite of a logical decision to me, and I never regretted it so far.
Absolutely. And that's a very common story. So athletes finishing up their careers, going back to study, but then badminton drawing them back in, happens so often, because I guess we're so married to the sport. We're so used to it being part of our lives that we are always drawn back to it. So Toby, it's been great to explore your badminton story as an athlete, and then how you decided to make that change and transition out of your professional athlete career back into your study and now into coaching. And one of the main themes that we were discussing about your whole badminton story was really about finding your own way. So finding the way that you basically transition from being a junior to a senior, how you found the motivation, how there was rejection, or you didn't make it into the National Center 2 years in a row and you changed events. So you've really made your own way. Do you have anything to talk about with regards to this, that maybe a listener out there hasn't had everything fall in line for them? Maybe they've had some difficulties, maybe they've started late or something like that. And can you share some insight as to how someone can find their own way if they want it enough?
So I think the first step is always finding something that you really love. And that sounds easier than it actually is. I think having that self-awareness and really feeling what makes you happy is not that easy. But I was happy with badminton. I think also because of that coach, I felt that this was really giving me a lot of joy. And I didn't felt at that time at all like a sacrifice to put in the time, put in the training. I think this is a really good sign if you do something all the time and you don't have the feeling that you sacrifice something. And then I would always say, go for it. That was the best experience in my life. Also, those maybe years that didn't went as I wanted, and with the injury, with the rejection sometimes, I always had the feeling that I'm doing what I love and I'm not regretting it. I also felt it was quite liberating to make that all indecision. Many times also before, I always was thinking about, I don't want to close that door here. I want to keep all the possibilities here. In the end, I cannot say I didn't try it. Maybe what would if? And I had that peace of mind also, even when I stopped And when I didn't reach all my goals, I had the feeling I would do it right away. Once again, if I get into the same spot, even with those maybe small chances of making it to the Olympics, winning big tournaments, it was so much about the journey and also being happy with what you're doing.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that you have a lot of gratitude when it comes to the experience, regardless of the highs and lows and not being able to reach, you know, your highest goal in the end there, Toby. And it certainly seems that badminton has had a huge impact on your life and still continues to be a huge impact to your life. In terms of how it has helped you find your way and shape your personality, is there anything else that badminton has taught you that you wouldn't have learned from anywhere else?
Definitely. So much. So many things. I also felt a big difference. As I said, I studied before I went to the National Center and afterwards. And I was a completely different student when I came back. Like in the beginning, it was more like the maybe classic student. I didn't go partying all the time, but it was, yeah, always complaining, oh, so much work to do. And I don't have enough time to learn for those exams. And when I returned, I had also a completely different time management. And I was so much more focused when I had a task. I accomplished it and then I did the next one. And it was really no waste of time anymore because I had the goal. I want to finish those studies now. I want to not lose any time. And then I also saw the other students that some of them I started with. And even I was away 3 years, they were still studying and they were still not so far ahead of me. And they were always complaining about so many exams, but that was completely different to me. I didn't felt that at all after that. And so many things. I think one more thing is also, I realized every time that I put it in constant effort, like over a longer period of time, this was really making the difference. I think sometimes we are overestimating what we can do in one session or maybe one day or with a lot of big effort at one time compared to, and we underestimate what we can do over maybe 2-3 months or 1 year or even longer. And I realized it quite late that all my big successes always came after a period where I was able to put in work over a longer period of time without breaks. So maybe also killed a little bit my years in Saarbrücken that I had to make such a long break there. Yeah, I think these are two big takeaways.
Definitely. Definitely some key learnings there and how important persistence is to achieving your goals and achieving what you want to achieve. Because yeah, like you said, everyone's looking for those short-term gains, but then you just need to get past that tipping point. And then sometimes past that tipping point is just a little bit further along and you're definitely on the way there.
Just so I read a cool thing. I think it was a quote. It went something like, very hard things take some time, impossible things take a little bit longer. And it's really like you just said with that tipping point that in the beginning, you do not realize that you get better. If you train 3, 4, 5 times, that you won't feel a difference. But if you do it after a longer period, if we stay in terms of badminton, then you make a huge difference. And I also had, for example, the exact same thing with YouTube. I was starting without many expectations. I was just enjoying making those videos and I got a few followers each day. But I was very persistent. I was doing it every week, promoting it all the time. And then there also came that tipping point where I felt once again, okay, now it really takes off. And I think it's same with everything in life.
Yep. Fantastic. Snowball effect.
Yeah.
Okay. So Toby, now we've spoken a lot about your life as an athlete. And now if we go into your life as a coach. So previously in the podcast, we spoke about motivation. And this is something that we wanted to discuss, which was, how do you create a really good learning environment for athletes or for your players? And what do you do to foster the motivation in them?
I think the important thing again is here having a good relation with the players. Like also when I think back, I needed that feeling of the coach is trusting in my abilities and also that I feel that I'm good at what I'm doing. Like when I'm in the training, I need the feeling that it's actually good. I think a little bit like I said in the beginning, if you do something and always get the feeling like if you only get criticism by your coach and if you get no results, then it will be hard. So for me as a coach, I also really would love to make sure that the players always have that feeling. Even if they maybe do not get results, but I see that they are making a lot of progress, then I want to emphasize that progress and want to stand that out and Yeah, I think everybody in the training has to feel that he's valuable and he's important for the whole environment, even if he maybe is the weakest link and not winning so many matches. So this can sometimes be tricky. And yeah, I think this is a huge part for motivation to have that feeling. And another thing also here, the social aspect once again, I think with a bad atmosphere also in between the group, I don't have the feeling that players really fell in love with the sport without that. I don't have so much coaching experience yet. I only are doing it for a few years, but I'm seeing more and more players where that also stop quite abruptly. And I was not expecting that they stop. But then when I think about what they told about the last years of their training or about many years of their training, it was more about they felt that they had to do it. It was not really like that they enjoyed being in the training and being there with the other athletes. So yeah, I think two very important things, the social thing and also that feeling that you're important and good at it.
Yeah, I guess engaging your players so that they have that belief that you have the potential, and when they do perform well for themselves as an individual that we're providing, you know, as coaches, I'm not a coach, but as coaches out there, you're providing the support and belief for them as well. And now, Toby, we have a few questions that sort of tie into this as well that's come from some of our Instagram followers. So we're going to run through some of these and just get your insights as well. So the first one comes from Badminton Andy, who we asked the question for earlier. Now, the first question is, how do you continue to educate yourself as a coach?
Since a few weeks, a lot of reading. I started to pick up the habit of reading at least 10 pages a day. Before, I like reading, but I was never doing it enough. When I start, I can read quite a lot, but then I had no books at hand and I was really not reading a lot. And now I think even in those last 4 weeks, I finished 4 or 5 books, because if you get started with those 10 pages, you usually continue a little bit longer. And I also feel that how much these books actually give to me and how much knowledge there already is, like also podcasts, for example, there. We are living in a great time where we almost have all the information we need, or like so much great valuable information is out there already. Yeah, we just have to find the time to look for it and to, I think, not only read it and hear it, if it in terms of podcasts, also important for me is always writing down the most important things. I also felt that this makes such a big difference when you're just hearing something, it's kind of a vague thing in your head. And if you put it down on a paper and maybe try to put it into your own words, then it really sticks. And it's also something that I remember maybe 2 days later, 3 days later, when I get into the training and maybe have a situation where it can be used. So maybe the best advice, always having a pen and a piece of paper at hand when you're reading, when you're listening to a podcast. So this is the main source. But on the other hand, I also hope that after Corona, I have a lot of chances to maybe also go to other countries. I felt that always when I did it, I went to Denmark 2 times in the last years, that this is so much, gives so much inspiration, but also so much different ideas, seeing that other systems work in a completely different way. I only know the German system for 25 years. So then it's great to get that other insights from other systems also.
That is fantastic. And then we've got another question from Lillian Chen. So she's a longtime listener and follower. So shout out to her. And she's also a Patreon on our Patreon account as well. So she has asked, how do you not get bored as a coach? Because I guess there are many repetitive elements to it.
At the moment, I have the feeling that there's no chance that I will ever get bored in coaching, because there's so much that I don't know. I realize it every day. And I think the classic saying, the more you learn, the more you learn that you don't know, or something like that. I can totally agree on that. And I really can't see an end to anything of those things I'm doing right now, because I'm working on with kids at the sports school. And on the other side, I'm also doing coach education. And so I'm already working in two different areas. Then there's also elite coaching, where I'm thinking that might be interesting. I would also love to work with beginners. So even if something gets boring, I think there's always something else that would really interest me, or where I think I can put in a lot of new work and learn a lot of new things. So yeah, I haven't reached that moment yet that I get bored at any time in terms of coaching.
Yep. So far, it seems that there are many facets of coaching yet to be explored by you, Toby. So we hope that you can continue to explore those and challenge yourself while doing that as well. So there are actually a lot of other questions that have been asked too, but there's just too many for us to get through. So apologies in advance, apologies to our badminton community for not getting through all of them today. But thanks to everyone who has asked them, and make sure you keep them coming, and we'll do our best to ask our guests about them as well. So there's a few more questions that we want to ask you, Toby. The first one I think is important to wrap things up is there anything that we should have asked you and we haven't?
I have to think about that. I think one thing I didn't say earlier, finding your own way, what is so important is that everybody is so different. And that's also something I realize even more every day, that something that maybe worked for me doesn't work for someone else at all. And also maybe even those very common things like saying you have to love the sport to be successful, there are also examples that got extremely successful without loving it. For example, if you read the biography of Andre Agassi, you realize that he hates tennis, or at least a certain point of time. And it would be interesting to hear him how he would evaluate it now. Yeah, doing something he hated so long, but in the end got very successful, also got, I think, a very amazing life now. And yeah, it is always hard to say that something has to be like this, we have to do it that way. And maybe also a point where coaching never gets boring, because you will realize one player is totally different, you have to approach him in another way. There might be a player that doesn't care so much actually about that you have a deep relationship, he just wants to have you as a coach that always knows the right answers and knows how to challenge you. So yeah, I'm really also curious to learn more about that, because I feel I'm only just at the beginning of all those questions, all those different stories, and yeah, looking forward to see them in the players I coach now from the other perspective.
Yeah, I think that's just all part of your coaching journey and developing yourself as a coach, with all the different learnings you're going to take from the 10 pages you read every day to the international experience from the other coaches you're going to get after you're able to get around the world again, which we're all looking forward to. So speaking about looking forward to things, Henry and I are very excited to be watching the Tokyo Olympics this year. And it's something we've been speaking about for a little while since last year when it was meant to be held. And if you're listening to this podcast, Toby, in the past, you probably recall that at the end of each episode, we do ask all the guests to see what their gold medal predictions are in just the men's singles and women's singles events. So who is your bet on for the men's singles and the women's singles?
Of course, I listened to many of your episodes and also was expecting that question. I was hoping that I could give a little bit more, a little different answer in men's singles, because it's always the same. But yep, at the moment, it's hard to say anything else. But Kento Momota or Axelsen, and I also think that Momota will win it. Also thinking, it will be interesting to see the Chinese players getting back, because we haven't seen them also for a really long time. And I think also in the past, there have been some amazing, amazing performances by them when you haven't seen them for quite a while or at these big events. But yeah, I also have a hard time seeing anybody competing with Momota and Axelsen, and then I go for Momota. Mm-hmm. And for the women's singles, also here, same thing with Carolina at the moment, also after last week in Basel. She definitely is, again, a big competitor and probably also no one better at being at 100% at the big events. I would love to see Nozomi Okuhara at the top also, because I really enjoy her, or I love her mentality and also how she behaves on court and how she's fighting with this very small height of hers. Yeah. So maybe my head would say Carolina, my heart would say Nozomi Okuhara.
But who would you choose if you had to choose one?
Your head or your heart?
Then let's go for the heart. I go for Okuhara.
I really hope Okuhara is listening at some point, or I hope that she wins, because that would be a fantastic prediction there, Toby. Now, just for some updates on our poll, for those that have been following our poll, we have 4 men's singles at the moment. We are currently sitting at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Very hard to read numbers when they're just dashes. So 5 for Kento Momota. We've got 2 for Victor Axelsen. Those are your number 1 and number 2 at the moment. Those are the only ones that we've got vote for in the men's category. And for women's singles, we've got Carolina Marin. And Carolina is at 5. We've got Tai Su Ying at 2. And we've got Okuhara at 1. Interestingly, those numbers do not equal each other. So I think somewhere along the line, we have lost a men's singles vote. So apologies, badminton community. I'm going to just say that Momota probably has that 6th one as well, but we will go back through our episodes and find out as well, and just to correct ourselves on the next episode. Now, Toby, we have reached the end of our podcast. We do want to thank you again for coming on. We've really enjoyed our conversation, and perhaps it may have felt super fast for you as well, because we've certainly been having quite an enjoyable conversation with you, and perhaps we could be going on for another couple of hours, but we can't do that, unfortunately. So for our badminton community, who perhaps they haven't seen your videos and they do want to check them out or just get in contact with you or see what you're up to, how can they get in contact with you?
Basically, yeah, on YouTube, you cannot get on contact with me, but there I'm probably putting out the most content. And if you want to get in contact with me, Instagram, there you can also, as you said, there are a few questions left, then just write me there. I always try to get back to as many people as possible, or try to get back to everybody. So yeah, this is basically the best thing to reach out. Also Facebook, I was on there, but not that active anymore. Most things are on Instagram and YouTube.
No problem. So for all the listeners out there, we will put Toby's Instagram handle and his YouTube channel in the podcast description. So make sure you do check them out. And Toby, from myself and Henry and all the badminton community that is listening to this episode of the podcast, we just want to say thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge, your wisdom, all the lessons learned, because I do think there are so many things that someone can take away from this episode. So thank you once again.
Yeah, thanks once again for having me. Really didn't felt like an hour, and it was a pleasure and honor for me to be here.
Thanks, Toby.
So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at The Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at The Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode. Bye.